But at ground level, there were other threats. There were always potential rebels within the state, the aristocrats who had been forced to live in Gyeongju, for example. And on the coast, there were Japanese pirates. Here again, as on our tile, a dragon would provide security. But every Shilla king had to negotiate one great and ongoing political predicament: how to maintain freedom of action in the lowering shadow of his mighty neighbour, Tang China. The Chinese had supported the Shilla in their campaign to unify Korea, but only as a preliminary to China taking over the new kingdom itself. So the Shilla had to be both nimble and resolute in holding the Chinese emperor at bay while maintaining his political alliance. In cultural terms, the same subtle balancing act between dependence and autonomy has been going on for centuries and continues to this day. And we can see it in our tile. The tile is very similar to ones made in Tang China at the same time, but this is emphatically not a Chinese object. Unlike the broad grin of a Chinese dragon, the mouth here is small and aggressive, and the modelling of the tile has a rough vigour that's very un-Chinese. And it's this robust and energetic engagement with the clay that made Korean ceramics so appealing to 20th century Europeans, and especially to potters. Jane Portal again.
All throughout Korean history, Korean ceramics tend to be lumpier, less perfect, more sort of spontaneous, whereas Chinese ceramics are perfect and dead, in a way. And this is what attracted people in the 20th century, folk potters such as Bernard Leach, and they copied them, made studio pots, which were very influenced by Korean ceramics.